Hi everybody, welcome to the latest episode in the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast. My name's Alan Clark.
And I'm Bhairav Patel. Oh, and so here today, sorry guys, this is we are just starting off with a new format for the podcast. So previously we were called Bhairav and Alan's Fireside Chats, but then we realized, well, there's no fireside. And it's the chats were actually all about things that we were experiencing on a daily basis. So we decided to change the name of the podcast to the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast and actually start talking about stuff that we has happened to us in the week and also taking out of that a theme. So in this week, I'll share a couple of stories with you of some of the quite frankly crazy stuff that has happened. It's quite funny, but also a bit weird. And I want to talk to you a little bit. Well, we're going to discuss a little bit about some of the marketing that we've been doing because this is something Alan and I, well, Alan obviously knows a lot about. And I'm kind of dipping my toe into the world of marketing for the first time with Atom. And I just share some of my experiences around that and kind of what I was expecting and what has actually happened and, you know, I had a whole bunch of preconceptions and maybe misconceptions that are now gone and now I'm fully in it. So let's see what happens. But
you've done it in the real world now.
It's all the real world and it's not theory. And I think one of the biggest problems has been is that a lot of what I've been dealing with marketing over the last number of years, a lot of it has been theory. And okay, people have put, you know, in previous companies, I've been talking to the marketing department quite a bit. But you know, I guess a lot of it is out in the ethernet and you don't really see the tangible benefits of what's going on whereas when you're running your own business and it's a smaller business, you can really see the effects of what's happening and how the marketing is generating buzz and feedback for what we're selling, which is great. But I thought I'd start off with just a story because this is something I think lockdown has now broken people completely. Lockdown has totally, it just has made people gone a bit crazy. So I was, there's a company, a guy, let's say I've worked with many, many years ago, probably like at least 10 years ago, I first started working with him and he was, you know, he was selling IT resources and I, as CTO of a business out in Norway, I'd hired some people from him. And fast forward 10 years, he's running a business abroad. I'm in the UK and he had a client in the UK that he thought could do with help from Atom CTO. So he invited me to this meeting and I didn't really know much about the client. I know about his business. I'm not going to name names, obviously, but I know about his business and I've been recommending his businesses. It's great. What he does is fantastic. But he wanted me to come in and just talk to this client and maybe see how we could help. Because A, he's not based in the UK, but B, a lot of what this guy's doing is online e-commerce. And so it could be something that we could help with given my e-commerce experience. So I went into this meeting and, you know, the first 10, 15 minutes were just normal. And it was talking about what I do, what the client is doing, what kind of help he needs. And it quite quickly became apparent that actually there was nothing I could help him with really at the moment. His needs were completely different from what was needed. And so that was probably my friend's fault for not reading the room correctly, but it suddenly just descended into where the client basically was pissed off because he'd been waiting a number of weeks for something to happen. He'd been hoping that the guy I know, his company would help them. Hasn't been able to help them. Probably there was some sort of gap in the conversation, but it descended into, I can't take this anymore. You're fired. No, you're not fired. I'm not, you can't fire me. I'm firing you. And it's like a whole bunch of like 5 minutes of shouting. And then I just was sitting there kind of eating popcorn, looking at this thinking, what is going on? How did it go from like a conversation where I was brought in to see if we could help and just descended into something where now we're never going to speak to each other again. I've had enough. Don't want to do it. Cause it was such a quick escalation, right? I mean, it's something, those are the kinds of things that you would, I mean, like if it's a relationship, it's something that's bubbled over for years and years, right? And then something like the twig is snapped and suddenly everyone is going crazy. And yeah, this happened so quickly. And the ironic thing for me was I was sitting there thinking, but actually the client's right. I was sitting there thinking, if I was in his position, I'd be pretty upset as well. I mean, expectations were set that weren't being met. And, you know, he was being called into a meeting, which has no obvious benefit to him. And I just thought, wow. But then it kind of struck me is like, why did this happen? Like, why did it get to a situation where communication had broken down so badly? And then you got to a stage where you can just have a massive bust up on a call with complete strangers in front of you, right? It's the equivalent of having a slanging match in a shopping mall, right?
Yeah.
Between you and your partner. Like, how did they get to that stage? And I just kind of assumed that, I just thought that it must be because the communication hasn't happened before, right?
Yeah.
And that's that there's people that are just not really, either not listening or they're not saying.
Well, isn't the art of communication at the heart of everything good that happens? When we communicate clearly and well, as you see, when we can articulate actually the information or the requirement we have, but equally, we can all listen really carefully to what the other party is saying and then add some value into it. So, you know, that wouldn't surprise me that if this is one of those ones where it only became clear in that exchange with you. I was going to say on the sidelines, but no, you were standing in the middle of the boxing ring, just trying to keep out the way of the punches. And these two decided to slug it out there and then. You know, these things do happen, but had everybody been clear on expectations, understanding, reasonable outcome, we'd never have got there.
But then the other thing that kind of surprised me in this whole circumstance was I only was in that meeting for 15 minutes and I could quite clearly see the problem and I could quite clearly see the solution because the guy had a problem and I could solve his problem. I knew exactly how to solve his problem, but it's got nothing to do necessarily with a technology aspect. It's just stuff that I know from a business aspect, right? I've been in e-commerce businesses before. We came across that problem many years ago. We know how to solve it, right? It just struck me that, well, hang on, but why is this all really obvious to me? And why are these two people have been sitting there for 4 weeks now trying to work this out and haven't really come to any kind of conclusion or any kind of path to solving it?
And this meeting you had, was this over Zoom or online or in person?
It was a web meeting. And unfortunately, like, you could only see one of the parties. You couldn't see the other party. And so you can't read facial cues. And again, when the client who was angry, you could see the frustration, but it wasn't like shouting angry. I mean, I've been in companies where people are throwing things at other people's heads, right? Like that. So this wasn't that kind of angry. I mean, I thought, yeah. But I mean, he made the very good point of he was losing £5,000 to £6,000 a week because of this. And so who wouldn't be pissed off if you're losing that kind of money?
Given the current circumstances, was it anything to do with pent up frustration caused by all the frustrations that we've all suffered over the last 6 months in the world that is absolutely new to everybody? And or is there an aspect here which is good communication is not really facilitated by meeting in this environment online, that actually when you sit in a room you actually communicate better?
I don't know. I think honestly, in this situation, I think if people are just objectively taking their emotions out and said, this is the problem. And the problem boils down to one thing, right? This guy couldn't shift goods. So he couldn't sell goods for X reason. And surely everyone just looks at, okay, this is the reason we can't do it. Why don't we go and figure out the solution to this problem? I mean, you don't need much communication to figure that out. And I think COVID obviously does play a part here, because I think people's, their wicks or their, you know, the tempers of the fuses are shorter, but business is still business, right? I mean,
but you see that wicks are shorter, tempers are shorter. I've actually got loads of experience that people are much more chilled out now than they were before, because they are awfully anxious and upset about things that really weren't that important. Whereas there's now been this massive reality check, which is, let's put this into context. What we're really getting anxious about is a really small issue in the overall scheme of things.
So this,
let's just sort it out.
So this brings me on to another thing that happened this week. And I had four, well, actually, let me start in another thing. In between all this, we're putting in an advert into a print publication, right? Who will not be named.
A what?
And print publication, it's amazing, isn't it?
Still exist.
Yeah, they still exist. And I thought, well, why not? It's a couple hundred quid. Let's see what happens. What's the worst that can happen? And I thought, let's see how that goes. And then we got sent an invoice, and we were meant to be paying that invoice after it comes out in publication, because, you know, we're not creditors of that business.
Yeah, absolutely.
we're not going to do that. And so they sent me an invoice because we're doing it over 3 months for the whole thing. It's like £1,000 for over X number of months, right?
Yeah.
And I said, well, why are you sending this invoice now? I meant to send it later. Oh, no, it's a statement. I said, no, it's an invoice with a due date. And so we got into it. It wasn't an argument as such from my side. I just sent it around saying, can you not see that this is confusing? You're sending through a statement for something where you're giving me a 20 days payment notice for something you're not going to deliver for another 2 to 3 months. And she goes, no, it's not confusing at all. You're confusing the matter. And I'm like, wow, it's so quick. So that the when they wanted my money, they were the nicest people on the planet, but yeah, they wouldn't stop pestering me. And now they've got the pledge. They are the just, they just don't give a shit. And you're like, wow, that really is. I'm never gonna go back to you ever again. And actually,
and does that come down to good communication again?
It does. And it, you know, again, on an email, you can't, if I say, can you not see it's confusing? You can't reply back to me saying, no, you're not, it's not confusing at all. It's like, you can at least say, I can see your problem. I can empathize, right? A little bit of an empathy there.
I had a similar but different challenge this week. It was, my son's now turned 18, so we had some very small investments that we set up in our name for him. And it was about now transferring them to him. So I contacted the broker and they sent me back an email of what I had to do. And I had to reply to it saying, can you please translate into English that I might actually understand what all of this means? You clearly have the view that I understand investment language. These are words that individually I recognize, but collectively mean nothing to me.
And what did they actually respond to that?
They haven't yet.
No.
But as you know, we look at it in the past, there was always this plain English thing.
Yeah.
There is nothing that can't be explained in plain English that is any better for using technical language.
But I thought actually plain English is part of the law now, isn't it? Isn't it part of the law that you have to explain these things in plain English?
I'm sure there is a lot that is covered by that, but a client service exec in a fund management company sending an email to a customer who clearly had never done the presume your customer is an idiot and make it easier for them.
Yeah.
Training. And I'm sure there's loads of people that you deal with that go, yeah, I absolutely understand this language, but for me, it really was, I don't ever want to deal with this firm again, because you know what, this is harder than it needs to be.
And this is I guess when you're talking about the real world entrepreneurship piece to this podcast, right? This is the real world piece, right? It's people
absolutely
making your life harder for absolutely no reason. Right.
Yeah.
I didn't have to exchange 3 emails with this person to ask them, like, why are you doing, you know, firstly, don't do it in the first place. Don't send me invoices before you're actually delivering anything. And secondly, don't be rude to me. Right. It's like, and essentially that has that knock on effect. So then it doesn't worse. It's not like I went off angry, but it's something that sticks with you. Right. And then it means that it just kind of pisses you off for the rest of the day. It was like, well, why? That was completely unnecessary. Similarly, with this argument between these two people. Okay, it was fascinating. And, you know, I had the kind of dilemma afterwards thinking, well, I sympathize with the client. Should I message him to let him know?
Yeah.
Because I did explain the solution, but should I message him? And then I thought, well, no, because, you know, ultimately I've got other things to deal with now and I don't want to get involved in someone else's craziness.
Yeah.
But it's, in a way, it's a little bit of a distraction from the focus of what you need to get done.
Yeah.
As an entrepreneur and a business owner, right? You just don't need someone to give you lip when you're paying them.
But there's, everybody wants effectiveness. They want whatever the issue is sorted out. Like me, doing that little fund transfer. If you come back, and once I knew what to do, I would just have done it. But it's like another, it never got off my to-do list. It's another thing I've got to deal with that isn't adding value anywhere down the line. I just need it done. And the less time I have to spend on stuff like that, the more time I can focus on things that really matter. And this comes back to, you know, I know we're about to start chatting about marketing, but one of those issues at the heart, you know, I'm really super passionate about what is marketing. You've heard me bang on about this before. And it is defined by the Institute of Marketing as understanding, anticipating, and satisfying customer requirements. So my customer requirement was not satisfied. So am I simply not their customer? They are not for people like me. In which case I should take out, none of what I have is going to impact their business, but me and my two sons take all what we've done with them and go and find a manager that will actually understand we are for average Joes, not investment articulate people.
Yeah, I think that's, it's interesting that, because as you what you say is that, you know, you taking your business away from them is not going to make them go under. But actually, if they are like this to 80% of their clients, and 80% of their clients decide that there's an easier way, and that's why you have the disruptors, I guess, in the marketplace, right? 80% of people go to someone who does make it easier, then yeah, you do lose your business. That's why you have to have something that is customer-centric, right?
Well, and then you move to the CEO of that firm, and if I had one question to ask him was, do you believe you truly understand your customer's requirements? And if
well,
said, absolutely, I'd say, well, that's great, because that's your job. And then you mold your business around that. But if you say, well, yes, because we investigated this 5 years ago, or you can articulate a particular group and say, but you market your business to other groups as well. Do you really understand this? Or are you not close enough to your customers and your prospective customers?
So this raises an interesting question of who do you perceive your customers to be? And I learned this quite early on in one of the startups I was working at, where, you know, when I joined that business, I assumed our customers were our actual customers. And then when you quickly realize is that our customers, the business, the people who we were serving, wasn't actually our customers, it was our investors.
Yeah.
Right. That's all we were serving. Because, yep. And when I mean investors, not, I don't mean shareholders in the business. I mean people who are investing money on the platform to do stuff.
Yeah.
And because they were the ones with the cash, right? And so you're realizing that, yeah, not necessarily, you are kind of playing lip service to the end users, because you're saying to them, oh yeah, yeah, we care about you, but actually we care about the money.
Yeah.
And then it must be the same in your situation, right? Yes, we care about you, but actually there'll be another Alan Clark who'll come along and put his.
And that is entirely up to them. And so that's the strategy of the business. That's their choices. That's the decisions they make. But you will never feel sorry for that business when it goes out, if it should ever go out of business, because actually somebody came in and identified or addressed the issues those customers had better than they were. Well, that's your fault. You took your eye off the ball.
So I'm going to be a little bit controversial here. In a firm like that, let's say they do go bust, everyone starts feeling about the employees and talking about the employees. But actually, and I'll be honest, if that company that sent me the letter with paying for the invoice, if they all go bust, I don't give a shit, simply because they're rude to me, right? Yeah. If they lose their jobs, well, then they shouldn't be so arsey with their customers, right? It's everyone in that business is involved in that.
There's a famous story that I've heard from more than one person, so I'm not sure who actually has witnessed this firsthand, but the example I'll give you without naming the brands involved, it was a watch manufacturer who went to his advertising agency and said, we need some advertising. And the advertising agency went and did all the research on the kind of people that might buy that watch brand. And they came back and said, but this can never justify spending your money to try and reach this end customer who puts a watch on the wrist with all of that other stuff. And the watch manufacturer said, no, you don't understand. We don't care about them. All we care about is the jewellery retailers who want to know that we are trying to speak to those people, who then put our watch in their windows and sell them to those people when they come through the door. We know those end customers will never really see the advertising because we can't afford to do it at that scale. But every jeweller sees it and says, Company A is spending a lot of money, we'd better make sure we have their watches in the window. There's a brilliant example of in marketing terms, understanding your customers and their requirements. So that was all about opening their distribution channel and then letting the distribution channel close sales.
Yeah, that watches are an interesting one, actually. Now you bring that up because, you know, you always see the Audemars or you see the Hublot adverts at the airports and you're like, who is that for? I can't afford these watches, right? So someone is walking past and thinking, oh yeah, I must go buy a Audemars watch. And it's like Rolex sponsoring all the golf events, right? But again, it's not about the people playing golf, right? It's there's a bit of, there's the aspirational aspect of it all, but there's also—
Absolutely. Man, that's just opening up a whole new issue around what is the role for advertising and marketing for that business. So a lot of these people, it is just about saliency. It's about the right kind of association so that when the moment comes for those that are in the market, they buy a Rolex. I have a child that's coming up to 21st birthday shortly. And I've got two dilemmas and I would love your thought on the first one. I've always wanted to buy him a lifetime watch for his 21st birthday. Ever since he was born, I thought that's what I'm going to do and he'll have it for the rest. And it'll always be there. Mum and Dad bought me that. My 21st is now 60 years old. Of course, he's never worn a watch in his life. Because he's got a mobile book, can't see it on screen. He's got a phone, doesn't need a watch. So is that entirely pointless? Is that me putting my values onto him? I have touched the subject with him and he said, well, it'd be nice to have because it is something that I will always have that marked a moment in my life. But I'll probably never use it other than high days and holidays when I put my nice watch on.
But that's the point, isn't it? I mean, I remember my 21st birthday, some of my best friends gave me these cufflinks, some very expensive cufflinks, right? And, you know, they're very brash. But I'm not wearing cufflinks every day. But every time I go to a wedding or every time I go to something, you put them on, right? Because, you know, depending on the type of wedding, I'm probably not going to lose them. It depends how drunk you get, right? But of course, I think the thing is, you know they exist. I know where they are in the house. And you know that I've taken them with me to every country. I got them in the UK and I've taken them with me to every country I've lived in because I know that if I've got them, I'll wear them to any of the special occasions. And I think that's the key, right?
Your example there, I have cufflinks. I remember my wee boy, my father, 45 years ago, but every man wore cufflinks to the office because it was really short as well. I have those cufflinks that my dad wore. Had just his everyday cufflinks. They're not valuable, but they're sentimentally highly valuable. And I wear them all in the main family. My dad passed away a long time ago. I wear them at all our family weddings and things like that. Papa's cufflinks are there. The other thing, talking about marketing, was looking at this, I came across an article. Because I don't know, maybe I'm just from that generation where a Rolex is a great watch. And there's another brand, Omega, and it said why you should always buy an Omega, not a Rolex. And, you know, Omega watches are still good watches, but they're about two-thirds of the price of a similar Rolex. And the gist of this story, which I think is really relevant to real world entrepreneurship and building value. They did a brief technical analysis which effectively said an Omega watch is a much better built and made watch than a Rolex and will last much longer without any requirement for expensive servicing. But the reason people want Rolexes, the man that set up Omega was a watchmaker who wanted to make the best watches he could. The man who created Rolex, set up Rolex, was a trader who wanted to build a brand. So he got watches made for him. He effectively just got anything that you can build a brand around. And they have spent 100 years building the Rolex brand. Omega have spent 100 years building great watches. Ergo, buy an Omega, not a Rolex.
Yeah, and so that's really interesting because, I mean, I've got friends of mine who trade Rolexes and things like that, and there's a huge market for that, right?
That's where part of this was. You can get a Rolex somewhere, or list price, £7,500, or a Omega, whatever it was, at £5,000. You can go out and buy the Omega tomorrow, it's a better watch. You cannot get the Submariner because they limit supply to make sure the brand is always aspirational. It is not easy. If you've got one, you're meant to have one.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely. So I think you should definitely buy the watch.
Okay.
So I think that's it's a good segue into the real world marketing piece that we're talking about now, because when we started Atom Ventures and Atom CTO, we never really did any marketing at all. It was all just done through the network, in the sense that people would come to us who knew us, or you know, we would get referrals from people that we'd done work for, which is great. And as we were looking to expand, we realized that, okay, we need to start getting out there doing some sort of marketing, because ultimately networks do die. Well, they, you know, you reach the end point of your network at some point in time, right? Plus you need to build up a pipeline because it takes time to convert leads, and that's it. So when we set off on the marketing journey, the problem is, how much do you spend? And having learned from the Avrium story, where you can spend £15,000-£20,000 on marketing and get zero out of it, I really didn't want to go down that route. Of start to just to go out and do it. Not, I mean, not saying that we did that with Avrium, that we went out willy-nilly and it contacted everyone. I wanted to do it slightly differently, in the way that, okay, what, let's start with just awareness of what, who are we, what are we doing, and push it out without any kind of thought as to what that should bring us in. Because everyone goes, you need to think of the persona, you need to hone in directly on that kind of person that will buy, you need to get into their shoes and think about why is there, what they're looking for, what problems you need to solve, et cetera, et cetera. And then build a funnel and go to the high level and get your awareness, and then down to the lower end where you can then convert them. And it's all good thinking, it's all good theory. But my point was, well, I don't really know, because every single person who's bought our services has been different. It's not, I mean, I have categorized them, of course. We can categorize them into certain, actually almost age groups or backgrounds, but the drivers for buying are a little bit different, and we can guess as much as we can.
How different?
Well, some people are buying because they've had, let's say from an Atom CTO perspective, right? Some people are just having battles with their IT department, right? And other people, and they want someone who can come in and step in and just take over. Other people are they're not understanding anything about IT and don't know how anything costs or how to develop or what to develop. And then there's people who are technically very knowledgeable who just need help, I guess, organizing their thoughts and some guidance and some experience around it. So in a way, it's the same issue that you're tackling, is how to use technology in the most efficient way.
Absolutely. But, and they all recognize that we are not using technology efficiently, and we would really benefit from somebody knowledgeable, experienced, solution-driven, who will deliver an outcome that gets us the result that we need.
Exactly. So you
said they're all different. They all have exactly the same problem.
Well, they have different personas. So I guess it's coming down to that whole persona avatar thing, right? Where, you know, when you're listening to modern-day pitches from startups, it's all about Kelly walks into, Kelly owns a barbershop, and Kelly has problems with reconciling her accounts. And so therefore we have built this thing that reconciles her accounts for her, right? But you can't, it's not necessarily Kelly. It could be Omar. It could be, you know, Donald. Yeah. It could be whoever
and
it is.
The persona is only meant to be one representation of a group of people. We're trying to personalize it, make it seem like a real problem, not just sort of amorphous.
And I think that's where the trouble comes in, because you end up focusing on, oh, okay, I need to go for X type of people, but actually it's not the type of person, it's the problem.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
And I think that's the thing, is that a lot of the time you're focusing on, oh, who are you building engagement? Who are you doing? You know, who are you actually trying to reach? And it's not the who, it's the what are you trying to reach, in a sense of what is the problem that you're trying to solve?
That definition of marketing about being identifying, anticipating and satisfying customer requirements. But I think what you're saying there is, what matters is, what is the requirement?
Yeah, and so I guess my problem...
What you need to do, because it's no different to, you know, I would draw an analogy there of your local coffee shop that might serve a bunch of kids on their way to school in the morning, and then an hour later, it's a bunch of grandmothers meeting up to discuss whatever. There's very little they have in terms of demographic similarity, but they've both got exactly the same requirement.
So obviously you are a very different breed of marketing person than the ones I've been talking to there. Simply because the people I'm talking to, when I say to them, well, we don't really know, or we kind of know, but we just want to put stuff out there. They're like, no, you can't just put stuff out there, right? You have to know your person. You have to do this. It has to be focused. What do you do? And even though I went through this period where I was trying to, you know, we went for like a couple of months of talking to people about marketing, and they're like, I still don't understand what you do. Like, but you do. Of course you do. Because if you can't understand it, then how have we got clients? How do we have clients? If when you're talking to someone in marketing, they're, well, I don't really understand what you do. But you as a marketing person don't understand what we do. It seems that our clients do, because they come to us and we solve their problem. Uh-huh. So I think a lot of the problem is just the marketing people, right? It's the people involved in marketing, because they feel that they have this magic formula and this is the way that it should be done. And basically all the debate around marketing is, you know, how being laser focused on this group of individuals that you need to go and find. And actually we've done pretty much entirely the opposite. We've just gone out there and said, well, this is what we do, people. This is how we're doing it. Are you there? And we have, and we've actually seen in the last couple of weeks, we've actually started pumping out marketing. It's been, as you know, my struggles of not doing marketing. And then we did, and we've got some very, very good leads out of that. And that's not us focused on anything. That's just us putting our message out.
The challenge you have there, and I think there's an extent to which this comes maybe with experience. And it comes where one happily recognizes that there is more than one way to solve any problem. So if you are trained in a linear approach, which is we absolutely nail down the demographic, age, sex, location, car they drive, house they live in, all of that, and once we've got that, we will build out from there, that's absolutely appropriate in some circumstances. But it's not the only way to do it. And there are many circumstances where it's not appropriate. Let me suggest that kind of what's working for you or the model you like to follow. And it doesn't mean it's the only way of doing it, but understanding your business and you as a client, I would urge them to use two ears and one mouth in that order. Listen more carefully to what you're saying. Actually, it's a great link back right to the beginning about communication. Listen to what your requirements are, what your business model is, I mean, as in terms of how you see it working. I don't mean, you know, where the revenues come from, where the costs are, all that stuff. How you see this working and how you are not aiming to identify one micro niche in an industry with a profile and then go and say, right, we are the ointment for that pimple. Your approach is more of that evangelical one that is not literally build it and they will come, but it is, I have a point of view because I have a belief around how technology can help businesses. And a belief that there are people out there who have challenges right now that we particularly want to help. And they can all look very, very different. But as we touched on earlier, just a minute ago, they all recognize the same core truth. So what you're really saying is, here is what I believe in. If you share that view, get in touch, because we can probably work together. No matter what country, sector, technology, whatever it happens to be, we should have a conversation and we may well find fertile ground. That's just another model for how your advertising will work. But it does all, I firmly believe, and actually, that's another issue, just touch on a minute, that's about advertising. It does all still come back to that fundamental of you have identified or satisfying an aim to anticipate a set of customer requirements. And you know that if you do that and be their best choice, you will have a productive relationship with them. And that is marketing per se, because that all starts off with understanding a type of customer. And as you've identified, it's not that they're in that sector, that industry, that country, they're that age or that whatever. It's a mindset that you've identified. And you've developed a product that's right for them. You've also identified a pricing strategy that's right for them and a distribution strategy that's right for them. And you've developed some physical evidence around your website that's right for them. And that leaves another thing, which is communicating it. Marketing is not just your communication. It is not just your message and how you get out there. That's one element of marketing. But marketing is that whole totality around it. But you do, you know, you're saying, we've not done any marketing. I would stop you. I deliberately didn't jump in at that point because I thought I'd better let you my rant. You did loads of marketing. Loads of marketing. And in understanding this issue about developing a product that would actually meet that, about establishing a pricing model that would actually allow those people to be able to access your products and services. You thought about your distribution channels, which as well, in the connected world, it's pretty much direct. So you've done loads of marketing.
Yeah, so whenever I say we've not done any marketing, I always, people kind of bring me up on this point. But then a lot of what we do is, I guess it's that definition of marketing that you said, right? Because actually what I do is I go out there and network and I go out and talk to people. And we do the podcasts of the other set, the Atom Ventures podcast.
That's which is promotion.
Yeah, that's promotion, right? So that's not right. Mostly marketing.
Advertising, yeah. Promotion, marketing, yeah. Communications. But you only can do that because you understand the issue that you're there to address. You understand the types of people that might have that. You've developed a product or products and services that you can offer them to solve it. And you've considered a pricing strategy that would fit with their requirements. Only yeah. Once you have that can you go out and network.
True. But I also kind of feel that a lot of what we do is in the sense that when it comes to marketing and communications, a lot of what we put out there is not what people actually buy. For example, what I'm trying to say is that if we, let's say we put out a package for a virtual CTO and we'll give you advice, pretty much no one buys the package that we put out because actually everyone wants something a little bit tailored. Everyone is a little bit different.
Absolutely.
You kind of have to put that thing out to set a starting point, right? For people to understand this is how you can interact with us. And I think that's the key.
You're absolutely not a product company.
No, exactly.
And what you deliver is service, and it's tailor-made service, bespoke service, tailored to your particular requirements within this area. Because one size does not fit all.
No, and oddly, a lot of the work that is coming into us now is work that we don't even say that we do, but because of the fact that we are the CTOs, I guess people know that we can do this, and then they come to us to do it. And what we're trying to figure out now is how do we. It's because it's a sensitive piece of work. Like you'll go into a company and understand how they're operating and then essentially rework that. It's a very sensitive thing to kind of advertise because you can't just go up to someone and say, well, is your IT department shit? You can, of course, but those aren't things that people don't necessarily call you up about that in particular, they'll work around, they'll phrase that problem slightly differently. But I think another one of my issues around all of this is about engagement and how we people, you know, how many followers do you have, you know, how many people have seen the post, this, that, and the other. And actually we've been pumping out stuff consistently now for a couple of weeks, and people, first thing has been that people who we haven't spoken to, or Sam hasn't spoken to for a while, my business partner, have come back to him and say, hey, we're seeing what you're doing, this is great. For that's the one thing, right? That's the awareness piece, because people who have been out doing their own thing have come back and said, oh yes, this is what Byron and Sam are doing, great. But also it's the fact that actually for a business like ours, you don't need a million followers, right?
No.
To get business, you could have 20, and as long as one picks up the phone and says, hey, this is what I want to do, then actually it can be quite high value work that you've got going for you. And ultimately, you know, you can't go and fix 50 companies' problems right at the same time, unless we start scaling to that level, but we're not at that level yet. And I think this is the other kind of myth of around a lot of what the marketing advice I've been given is, oh, you have to build engagement, you have to build a community. It's like, but really, do I? Because all I want to do is I want to let people know that we're here, and this is what we can do, and plant that seed. So that if someone is having a chat, oh, well, oh yeah, I heard about Atom CTO. They can do these things. Why don't you go and check them out? And we've had more stuff coming from our website, which people have told me is terrible from an SEO perspective, terrible from this perspective, but stuff is being driven to that site. And all they need to do is click the book a conversation button, and that's all they're doing, right?
This is about understanding your model. This is where there is such a massive issue. I think we touched on this a while back about effectiveness versus efficiency. So efficiency is about, oh, we came top of search and we got so many clicks at the lowest average price into the site. Efficiency takes you to one level, and that is very much where I don't even want to categorize it as the old way and the young way or the whatever. It's not an age thing. It's an attitude. That is because it's really easy to measure that stuff, and it gives you something you can rationally change and chase. Whereas what really matters is exactly what you're talking about there. And what most business leaders would say, I don't care how many people are interested in what I do. I do care about how many customers I have. And I was working with a company this week, and it did say 80% of its business, there are only 12 companies that will ever buy from them that are really in their target. 20% and all the other stuff that actually, if it all disappeared, it wouldn't really matter as long as you had the 80%. That 80% comes from a pool of 12 companies. Six of them said, we would not entertain because they are bad clients. They are inept. Truly, all of the stuff he said, if the phone goes, we just say, no, thank you, we're not interested. The other six, they have great relationships with. They understand they're going to go in and train their people in the subject matter, become subject matter experts. And you see, for the rest of our days, we work with them because we understand their requirements and we make sure we are their best solution. You do not need lots if you've got the right. And that's you. You know, your business, you may choose to scale Atom to 10,000 consultants working in every corner of the world. I don't think that's your ambition remotely. So what you need is the right people, the right engagement with the right customers to allow you to do the work that you enjoy that will give you the returns you're looking for. That's understanding their requirements and how you match to them. Marketing.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's just you get sold something, and actually that something is a one-size-fits-all, right? You have to have this persona, you have to have this engagement. Everyone's saying to me, we have to be, why are we not in Instagram? It's like, what? None of our customers are on Instagram that I know of.
And right? If they are on Instagram, well, Facebook being a great example, your customers are on Facebook because they want to see what their pal is doing in Australia that holiday weekend with his wife and kids, or what their nephew's new baby looks like, or what the local sports club's doing. They do not want you telling them all about, we can help you with your technology issues. Wrong environment.
Exactly. And so these are the things, you know, and it's so when my marketing team comes up, oh, we need to do this. It's like, well, why? What is it? Who are you trying to reach? What do you think you're going to get out of it? Why are we doing it? Because one thing I actually learned from the e-commerce industry when I was out in Thailand, right? One channel done very well can be hugely effective rather than trying to do five channels pretty badly.
Do one thing, do it well.
Yeah.
Do less, do it better.
Yeah, no, that's so. I think from my perspective, you know, I went into it not really expecting anything because I was told that the way that we do things, you shouldn't expect anything. And then when we've got reactions out there, it's actually been one of these things. Well, it's great, it's fantastic. This is amazing.
But the best one of all, that's utter bollocks that you've been told here. Yes, do that, and you will not get the response based on the model that we think to, which is one dimensional. But your model may work perfectly. It's, they were a competitor of ours, and you know, years ago in the world of advertising, they started off a very small Scottish agency, and they ended up an agency of UK significance, still based in Scotland, still run by the same man. And they picked up an international airline advertising account in Scotland, and it was the biggest news in town. And the man that owned that business was interviewed and said, it's taken us 20 years to get this through the door. I've worked for 20 years because that was my long-term objective, and it started off by sending letters that never got opened. Then I met someone, then we introduced them, and we did all of that stuff. Because you know what? That was his model to gain that bit of business. And it was effective. It may not have been considered efficient, but when he landed the £20 million piece of business, it was worth everything. Because never mind that he got the business, it moved his whole business into another stratosphere.
Yeah,
another elevation.
And that's the thing, right? And some of the people that we're talking to now, just from the marketing, they've come directly through the marketing, are game-changing clients because they are massive, really. And they're just there thinking, well, we didn't think this existed out there. Now we've heard about you. You're exactly what we need for our moment in time, right? Which is the key.
Looping this right back to the beginning, I would suggest that if you are having conversations with marketing team, well, I shouldn't really do that because they are marketing, but they're just not a good fit. It is no different to the meeting that you sat in where the argument was, which was, we're not really talking, we've not communicated effectively because your solution will never fit my problem. It will not address what I need. So arguably, back at the beginning when you were having a conversation on that other model, they were not willing to listen to you and how you saw this working. And if they've been really honest, in the real world, they would have put his hand up. They would have put their hand up and said, we are not the right solution for your business. And they may have said, we know somebody that is, that works differently. Or they may simply have said, because you know what, I'd rather say that now and part on good terms, rather than take your money, save in the knowledge that we will never, ever deliver what you believe you're looking for. And the challenge there is, you hired them because they were subject matter specialists.
Yes.
And actually, intuitively, and I believe this passionately about virtually every company I've ever dealt with, they know more about their customers, their solutions, and how they will lever into it than any supplier they will bring in. They have to educate the supplier, and the supplier will either help them evolve their position or align in to where they are. There's a company that aligned in with your, my job is to evangelize about this issue, and I will then attract the kind of people that I can actually work with and add value to. And that's exactly what you're doing.
Yes, and I think this goes down to my pet hate of, especially when you get contacted by lots of different people and engaging with suppliers who basically feel that they know what you should be doing, but don't really know what you do. Right.
And that is the, I can tell you the answer. The answer is a banana. What's the problem? Why is the answer the banana? Because it's the only thing we have. So it better be the answer. I can't solve your problem for you. It looks like you've just frozen. Oh, no, you're back.
I'm back. Yep. No. So, yeah, no, and I think this is it, right? So I think this is the, what I've kind of, marketing, I guess, is the symptom of some of the problems in that what I realize now is the major problem is that we shouldn't be bringing in subject matter experts to do big things. We do get them laser focused on the small problems. So actually what I should have done with all of the people I've worked with in the past with regards to marketing, so the last 3 years, is actually present them with, this is the problem. We know what we do, right? We need a framework in which to do the messaging or whatever it is that we need to do. How do we do it effectively? And that's really the question that is to be answered, right? And we could work it out ourselves, but I'd rather spend maybe an hour or two with someone to say, well, this is the general framework of what you really should be trying to push out there based on people on your peers. And then we go off and develop that strategy internally rather than trying to bring other people in from externally that then asks you a whole bunch of questions that, you know the answer to, and you're spending all the time.
I think that's a subject for another podcast altogether, because I disagree with you wholeheartedly.
All right, there you go.
I think it is up to the business to make sure it hires the right subject matter specialist.
Yeah, well, then you get the problem of how do you try before you buy, right? And that's the...
It's up to you to make sure you find the right people. Or if you don't find them, and they are not working with you effectively, that you end the relationship quickly. But that's for a whole other time.
Indeed. So I guess we're reaching the end of the podcast now. Was there anything that has happened to you in the last 2 weeks?
Thing that I would reflect on, really coming through loud and clear, is thankfully most of the companies I work with are in pretty good health. And I ran a whole series of webinars on emerging from lockdown. And the one of the things that really, really appealed for me there, interested me there, was we reflected on what problems has lockdown created for your business. And there were loads. But just to balance that, we then reflected on what opportunities. And there were loads as well. But what really become really clear to me is the businesses that I work with who had actively been on the front foot before lockdown, working hard to evolve and develop and prepare for what is always a new world in the future. Whenever we've been, the future has always been new. They've come out of this pretty well, because some of the big themes around better use of technology, better use of digital, challenging the norms and how we work, have all put them in a position where they were much more easily able to adapt to what's happened and have come out the other side, usually in a better place, but almost without exception, not in a worse place. So never stand still.
Yes, I think the time that we're moving into is going to be very, very interesting. And it's good to see that, at least the businesses you're working with are coming out strong. I think the people that we are working with are doing well. And I think it shows by the fact that they're all looking to raise money and raising it, which is good.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Smashing. Till next time.
Cheers. Thanks for that, Alan.
See you later.
Bye.